This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. Our radio show is heard on Pacifica stations nationwide, and our TV show can be viewed on Free Speech TV and on our website. Israel has drawn international condemnation and even a rebuke from the UN Middle East Special Envoy over a law passed by the Knesset to annex some privately owned Palestinian land. The Settlements Bill, as it's called, in effect makes legal thousands of previously illegal Jewish settler homes in Judea and Samaria. The move could put Israel in the crosshairs of the International Criminal Court. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who backed the law, is scheduled to visit Donald Trump in the White House next week. My guest is Naomi Dan. She's the media program manager with the group Jewish Voice for Peace. Welcome to the program, Naomi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So first, let's talk about exactly which homes these were that have now been sort of retroactively made legal. Why has it been so politically contentious for the Israeli Knesset to have the residents of these homes living on land that was previously illegal? Why was this such an important issue to the Knesset, to the parliament?
Well, so the first thing that it's important to remember when we're talking about this new bill is that while people are talking about it as a sort of legalization of these previously illegal settlements, actually all of the settlements that Israel has put in the West Bank are illegal under international law. The Geneva Convention prohibits an occupying power from transferring its population into the territory that it's occupying. So all of the settlements, whether or not they had the blessing of the Israeli government or whether they're like these outposts that have just been legalized, are illegal under international law. But what this bill did that was a new step that has never been taken before was legalize retroactively the stealing of privately owned Palestinian land. There are many settlements in the West Bank that have the blessing of the Israeli government, and they're set up with roads and electricity and connected to all communications and transportation networks within Israel. And then there are other settlements, usually referred to as outposts, where ideological or religious settlers have set up homes on hilltops, taking over privately owned Palestinian land without the blessing of the government, and then squatted on that land and kicked off the Palestinian residents or farmers who previously owned it. And so what this bill does is legalize those outposts retroactively. And it's in reference to recent events like the evacuation of Amona, which was an outpost evacuated last week. It was delayed for many, many weeks. And because it was technically illegal under Israeli law prior to this new bill, they did evacuate it. But now settlements like Amona would be legal.
Now, Israel's own attorney general has warned that the bill is unconstitutional and that he will not defend the legislation in court. He may even be called to testify against it. So is there internal dissension even among high up officials, or is the attorney general fairly alone in his dissent against the bill?
There definitely is internal dissension. It was a controversial bill, but did pass by a good margin in the Knesset. As you said, the Attorney General has said that he is not able to defend it because it's unconstitutional. There are several Israeli human rights organizations that are going to be petitioning the High Court of Justice. And so it's definitely a bill that will come up for some scrutiny in the judiciary there. But I think the important thing to remember is that this kind of settlement and land grabbing and land taking has been happening in Israel, taking land from Palestinians for a very long time using different legal maneuvers, both within Israel proper and in the occupied territories. And so whether or not this bill is eventually struck down by a court, this pattern of stealing land is still happening.
Right. And so let's actually put into context what the settlements essentially amount to from a practical standpoint. The particular settlements that this bill would immediately impact, we mentioned earlier, have been around for a while. There are settlements that were built decades ago, that were occupied decades ago. A lot of right-wing Israeli settlers who kind of called claim to this land, but the land technically still belongs to Palestinians, right? That they hold the deeds to these lands. And these Palestinians have been waiting for some kind of legal way in which they could get their lands back. Now this law says, sorry, the land belongs to these settlers, but we'll pay you for them. And therefore, you will be, you know, there will be justice done because you will be getting some kind of financial compensation for these lands. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's right. So it basically is forcing Palestinian landowners who've had their land stolen from them or been denied access to lands that they were farming to then accept a settlement from the government as if that would make up for the fact that the land had been taken away. And there's no recourse for them. This is the other thing that's very significant about this bill is that the Israeli parliament is not supposed to have jurisdiction over land in the occupied territories. Land in the occupied territories and people who live there are under the jurisdiction of the military system because it's a military occupation there. But this is the first time that the Israeli parliament has really taken such a legal measure. And that's why people are talking about this law as de facto annexation.
Now, Israel's Deputy Foreign Minister Zippy Hotoveli says she issued a video where she basically tried to explain why the law was a just one. And she said that it reaches the right balance between the right of the Jewish families to their homes and the right of the owners to get compensation. I want you to comment on this. First of all, she doesn't acknowledge the fact that the owners are Palestinians. She just calls them the owners. And second of all, how are these two rights balanced? The rights of the Jewish settlers to live in the homes versus the right of the Palestinians to get paid for land that was stolen from them. I mean, it kind of blew my mind.
It's really some logic to be able to say that that's justice. It's not. It was land that was stolen from families that were living on it or farming it. And yes, now there have been settlers there for some of these places. They've been there for 20 years and they've built homes and families there. But they were doing that on a very unjust premise by stealing and evicting other people. And so that's not justice. And really the way that the Israeli parliament and Israeli politicians are rationalizing it is through this lens of seeing, well, the rights of Jewish people in Israel and in the territories we control take precedence over the rights of other people, over the rights of Palestinians. And so with that logic, well, of course it sounds balanced to them, but really that's a bit quite unjust and is not reflective of right. A judicial system or a governing system that treats all people with equal rights.
I mean, she even said that those settlers have the historic and legal right to that land, which I'm not sure where she got that from. Now, because this law has actually provoked so much international condemnation, the Israeli government apparently put out a list of talking points for its diplomats in countries around the world to find a way to justify this to other nations. The first point on that list of talking points is that the quote, the law is intended to address the problem of Israeli houses in the West Bank that were inadvertently built on land that is not state land. The majority of this construction took place decades ago. How inadvertent was the building of these settlements?
Inadvertently, wow, that's quite shocking. It's not inadvertent. This was very clearly land that belonged to its previous residents, to Palestinians. And it is the reason that it was easy for right-wing settlers, either for ideological or religious reasons, who wanted to take over land in Judea and Samaria, to really just walk in and take that land, is because there is a military occupation of that territory. So whether or not the Israeli government gave their blessing for individuals or families to take over those parts of the land, they were allowed to do so because the Israeli military is controlling that land militarily and controlling the freedom of movement of Palestinians. And the state itself is taking land quite frequently as well. And so this is privately owned Palestinian land. It wasn't land that was expropriated by the state and then allowed to build a settlement on, but it's still land that belonged to Palestinians and that people are being evicted from. Mm-hmm.
Among the rest of the talking points is the assertion that, and this is similar to what Zippy Hotovelli was saying, this is a balanced solution for the owners. It aims to minimize the need to destroy people's homes that were built many years ago. It's basically mostly emphasizing the rights of the settlers, but it also says it's important to note that the law addresses a limited number of existing cases and is in no way a license for land confiscation. I think maybe what it means is no way a license for more land confiscation in addition to the one that's being confiscated now. But does this bill actually give any recourse to future land grabs?
It does not. This is a bill that, whether or not it has a provision that allows future land grabs, and it doesn't, it is setting the stage and setting legal precedent for allowing that kind of behavior and saying to people who are seeking to seize more land in that territory that there won't be legal consequences.
Right. So it basically sends a message saying, you know, you can build an illegal settlement, and until we decide it's legal, it'll be illegal. But in the future, we could just make it legal and then you'll be fine.
Exactly. And that's the thing that the Israeli government has been saying to these settlers for several years. They weren't the evacuation of Amona that happened last week. That was a really unique sort of demolition of a settlement that doesn't happen very often. That was very controversial. It was delayed for months and months. There are huge protests and really actually violent protests against the Israeli security officers who came to evacuate it. That was a very unique blip in the scale of what's happening, which is settlement building that's been happening for 20 years, and that the Israeli government has either been fully endorsing certain settlements or just turning a blind eye to others.
Let's talk about how the law is being interpreted and viewed internationally. I mentioned the UN Special Envoy has condemned the law, and some have said this could land Israel in the International Criminal Court. And the main fear is that it undermines, this is what's being stated, it undermines a two-state solution, threatens the viability of a two-state solution by making legal settlements that are deep within the West Bank. Is this likely going to damage prospects for a two-state solution?
I think a lot of people are seeing this bill as one of the final nails in the coffin of this idea that there is a peace process happening right now that might lead towards a two-state solution. I think that's been pretty dead in the water for a while because of the way that Israel has continued grabbing land since the 1990s, when there was originally a peace process, the Oslo peace process, that said as a result of the process, there should be two states for two peoples. But in the meantime, that hasn't been moving forward. And instead, there's been continual land grabbing and continual building. And now this kind of de facto annexation. And what it leaves Palestinians with isn't a full state that could be independent and have full autonomy. It leaves them with a territory that's cut up into little pieces by settlements and then the security apparatus that goes along with settlements. And so Jewish-only roads and checkpoints and soldiers and training grounds for the army and all of the things that are set up and creating basically a Bantustan where Palestinians are only able to access certain enclaves and certain cities in that territory.
Naomi,
so I think the two-state...
Go ahead, mm-hmm. Finish your sentence.
So I think the two-state solution, saying that this is the end of the two-state solution seems like something that definitely should be talked about right now. And I think even before this bill, there was a lot of doubt that Israel was really serious about the two-state solution.
Let's talk about U.S.-Israel relations, because, of course, that is always an important context whenever we talk about what's happening inside Israel. Does the timing of the passage of this law indicate that Israel might be emboldened by having more of a friend in the White House than it perceived Obama as, setting aside the reality of the fact that Obama was actually very favorable to Israeli interests? Trump has been more verbally so. Does Trump's inauguration in the White House as president have anything, you think, to do with the timing of this bill's passage?
It absolutely does. This bill has been in the works for quite some time, and the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu has been slowing it down. But in the few weeks since Trump's inauguration, there's been a flurry of settlement construction. I think over 6,000 new units have been announced. A whole new settlement, the first actually brand new settlement, not just expansion of existing ones, is announced. And then this bill. And so it's very clear that the Israeli government sees it has a favorable friend in the White House. And the Trump administration really is aligning itself with the far, far right in Israel, further to the right than Prime Minister Netanyahu, actually, those who are putting pressure on him to annex the West Bank and those who have been supporting this bill. There was a statement last week by the Trump administration that seemed to surprise some people, although maybe it shouldn't have, where they said, well, settlements are not really an obstacle to peace, but they might not be that helpful. And so some people saw that as a sign that, well, maybe he might not be quite as permissive towards settlements as people anticipated him to be. But really, actually, what that statement did was throw away decades of U.S. policy to say settlements are not a problem. We think that maybe they're not that helpful. We don't really like being surprised by them. But they aren't an obstacle to peace. And so then when this bill came up for vote, this week, Netanyahu called Trump and gave him a heads up that it was going to happen. And so I think we're going to see the Israeli government being more and more emboldened by the Trump administration, particularly as they're appointing people who have been longtime supporters of the settlement enterprise, like the appointee for ambassador to Israel, David Friedman, or other advisors in the Trump administration, like Jared Kushner and Jason Greenblatt.
Hmm. Now, essentially, among the promises that Trump made during his campaign was that the U.S. embassy would move to Jerusalem. Would that be a symbolic blow to this image of the U.S. as being a broker of some kind of future unnamed theoretical peaceful solution between Palestinians and Israelis?
Yeah, so moving the embassy to Jerusalem is significant for lots of different reasons, but it's definitely seen as a de facto U.S. Support for Israel's unilateral annexation of that city in 1967. East Jerusalem, the part of Jerusalem that Israel took over in 67, is also considered occupied territory, and so moving the embassy there would be seen as a sign that the U.S. endorsed that occupation. There is no other country in the world that has its embassy in Jerusalem. The international community doesn't recognize Israeli sovereignty over Jerusalem. Jerusalem is supposed to be a shared city. It's supposed to be decided in the final status negotiations. And so really moving the embassy to Jerusalem would wipe away the mask that the U.S. Thinks that there's going to be some sort of peace agreement that's going to settle that issue, and we'll just hand it to Israel. And I think it's also very significant as a city that's holy to many different people, a city that is really central to Palestinian identity, a city that's holy to Muslims and Christians and Jews. And so it's definitely an important issue for many people and will have a big repercussions for lots of people.
Now, Naomi, over the past decade or so, but particularly in the last few years, there had been a lot of progress internationally for the right of and support for Palestinians and the right of Palestinians to their homeland, some moves at the United Nations, the UK government today this week condemned in very strong terms the settlements bill. Do you see the sort of new emerging international dynamic under Trump's administration of the U.S. and Israel once more being aligned against many countries in the world over Israeli actions, you know, just sort of seeing a stepping back from the minimal progress that had been made for Palestinian rights over the last few years?
Yeah. So what's happened over the last few years is that there's a much greater awareness of Palestinian rights and the denial that's happening of those rights in the international community. And that's happening in lots of different ways. It's happening at the diplomatic level with many countries in the European Union and the European Union itself starting to say, we're not going to support companies that are doing business in the settlements, progress that's being made at the UN to recognize Palestinians and Palestinian rights. progress that's being made. Palestinians who leadership has tried to access the International Criminal Court and other international forums. And there really is, I think, shifting opinion and increasing isolation of Israel because of its violations of international law. But the U.S. has still, during the Obama administration, really played a role as Israel's protector in those international forums. The very significant abstention from the UN Security Council resolution back in December made lots of news and was surprising, but actually it was because of the Obama administration had blocked every single resolution relating to Israel prior to that. So there's that kind of change that's happened in the international arena. And then there's the kind of change that's happening at the level of civil society. In 2005, Palestinian civil society groups called for a global grassroots movement to boycott, divest, and sanction Israel until it complied with international law. And that movement has been really gaining power in the last 10 years or so, primarily in Europe and some other countries, but now here in the U.S. as well.
Naomi, your organization, Jewish Voice for Peace, has been doing a lot of work on the situation in Israel and Palestine and also focused here in the U.S. Give out a website where people can find out more about the work that you do.
Yes, our website is jewishvoiceforpeace.org.
That's jewishvoiceforpeace.org. We'll post a link to it from our website later today. Naomi, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Naomi Dan is the Media Program Manager with Jewish Voice for Peace. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/RU with Sonali.